Are you bored of TV? Getting bored with the pandemic? Or still paying alimony? Why don't you go read How to See a Man About a Dog? Collected writings. It's surreal. It's strange. It's How to See a Man About a Dog. Get your dose of surreal prose and poetry with this dark comedy collection. Ebook available on Kindle and Kindle Unlimited. Print copies available on Amazon, Book Depository, and more. Please check the link in the show notes as well. The following is a Super Network production with Super Marcy.
If I could have given them that money, I would have gladly taken my cameo in The Fanatic.
The terrible Australian B. Jemine.
See, that's a version of this scene I want to see. Instead of Casey Jones, it's just Jason Voorhees.
It contains coarse language.
This movie has had two different women having two different tongues up their
mature themes.
Like, I could also imagine, like, some people at this party could also be members of the cult.
Potential spoilers.
Spoiler alert.
Listener discretion is advised. Please find us at supermarcy.com and subscribe to us via Patreon at patreon.com/thesupernetwork. Enjoy.
California Women's Crisis Counseling. My name is Laura. How can I help you?
Laura, I do have a crisis. I've killed someone, Laura.
Are you listening to me?
Huh? Who is this?
Just one question. Do you think it's over, Sydney?
Do you?
Whoever it is now taking credit
for Maureen Prescott's murder.
But we know who killed Maureen Prescott. Billy Loomis and Stu Marker. I mean, they even told Sydney how they did it.
Maybe there is a third killer.
Guys, this was about Cotton. We are not in any danger.
We are not in any danger, says Candy, page 15.
Who the fuck is this?
Somebody who killed to know where Sydney Prescott is.
What do you know about trilogies?
Well, all I know about movie trilogies is that one, all bets are off. Do you want to have this conversation with a polygraph? Is that a threat, detective? It's a threat.
Was that a threat?
Here's how I see it. I've got no house, no bodyguard, no movie, and I'm being stalked. Because someone wants to kill me? No, because someone wants to kill you. So now, starting now, I go where you go. That way, if someone wants to kill me, I'll be with you. And since they really want to kill you, they won't kill me. They'll kill you. Make sense?
None.
G'day, everyone. This is Benjamin, aka The Terrible Aussie, and welcome to the October audio commentary edition of the Super Podcast. And with me, as always, is my lovely co-host, the one, the only, Super Marcy. Hello, Marcy. How are you?
Hello, hello. We are here, back again. It's October. It's the spooky season. And we are back for our monthly group-voted commentary. And, of course, it was all horror sequels. And we have an interesting one because this was not the film that was leading the poll for most of the time.
Indeed, indeed. And but before we get to telling our audience what that film is, we have a very special guest.
We do.
Who is joining us for this commentary. And it's someone who hasn't been on the show for a little while, but she is back to come and join us to talk about this movie, and that, of course, is Tamika Jones. Hello, Tamika. How are you?
Yay! I'm great. I'm happy to be with you both talking about this movie. I just really love this franchise, and I'm excited.
Me too. Me too. And I'm so happy that we have you back on the podcast. I think the last time you were on, it was for a King Zone episode, I think.
Was.
Yeah.
It was. It was the
Sleepwalkers.
It was Sleepwalkers. Yes, it was. Wasn't it? Yeah.
Sleepwalkers and Maximum Overdrive.
Yeah, boy.
Yes.
And the movie where we... It definitely was. But and it's a good thing that the three of us are back together again, because we're going to be doing an audio commentary on a film, which is basically the Maximum Overdrive / Sleepwalkers of this franchise. And that, of course, is Scream 3, which was a huge surprise, because we had a whole bunch of horror sequels on the poll. And for a while there, Exorcist 3 was actually in the lead for quite a while.
Mm.
And I know you and I, Marcy, we were actually pretty excited to talk about that film because, you know, we hadn't seen that one in a little while, and that would make for an interesting commentary. And then all of a sudden, at the very last minute, a bunch of last minute votes came in and they went to Scream 3.
Yeah. And it's very relevant we're doing a Scream film, because the new Scream film recently debuted the trailer. So we will be getting, like, I guess technically Scream 5. What is it, coming next year?
Yes, in January next year.
Yes, there we go. So it's not far away. I'm very excited. I'm pretty sure I actually... I'm trying to remember. I think maybe the first Scream was the only one I didn't see in the cinema. The rest I did.
I think for me, I didn't see the first two films in the cinema. I almost did, and I'll talk about that story on the episode, but I did see the third film in the cinema.
Sorry, having a coughing. but yes, I think I was a little bit younger. And probably couldn't go see Scream in the cinema, but it was something I saw like straight away on VHS. So, been a long time Scream fan, and yes. I have not seen Scream 3 for ages. So I'm very excited to revisit Courtney Cox's bad hairstyle.
Yes. And what about yourself, Tamika?
I was going to say, I wonder if it was her hair was a wig. Because, you know, sometimes.
It would explain everything. I haven't seen it in a while either.
Everyone stopped talking.
Sorry, I thought that was a slight delay.
I didn't want to cut you off, Bede. I'm sorry.
That's all right. That's what I mean. I thought I just waited. Then I thought, oh, there might have been a delay, but it's like we're just not trying to interrupt each other.
But everyone just stopped.
Exactly.
Life stopped.
Exactly. Just like Sydney Campbell's life did in the first Scream movie. But anyways.
Sydney Campbell?
Stop that. Sydney Prescott, sorry. Leave me alone. I've been up since 6:30 this morning. Anyways, we'll get started on Scream 3. But before we do, laid out the ground rules for our audio commentaries, as we usually do. Mm-hmm. What you need to do is go look for the film Scream 3, which is currently it's streaming on different film streaming platforms all over the world. So either free or to rent, so definitely, or if you have a copy of this film on DVD or Blu-ray, that should also help too. And we're going to be starting the film from the very start. And then, but for all those out there, since the version we're going to be watching, you know, like we have different versions of this film, we'll pretty much start from, if you want, our listeners want to start somewhere in particular, probably best to start from the Dimension film logo, which will probably make it easier for everybody. So, because I know, I think the Australian version might have slightly different opening credits, just to sort of play it safe. But we'll make sure to give a timestamp as well. So, but anyways, so we'll play the film from the very start. And then I'll count down from 5. And then when I say go, that's when you play the movie. And then that way our audio commentary will be in sync with the film.
Yes.
And I completely butchered up all that, the rules once again, because, you know, I'm Bede Devine, so that is always on brand for me. But anyways.
It made perfect sense. It's like, we're going to start the movie at 0000. The Australian version might be slightly different at the beginning, but we'll give timestamps if people want to watch as they listen to us. Or they can just listen to it on its own because we are so entertaining.
Exactly.
Yeah, we are.
So, yeah. But, all right, let's do this.
Exactly. You said it way better than I ever did, Marcy. But but we'll get started. Now, Marcy and Tamika, are you ready to scream for Scream 3?
Yes.
And it actually makes sense because there's three of us here and we're going to scream watching this Scream 3. Anyways, let's do this. Count us in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Go.
And we're off. And it starts off with the piano Miramax music.
Yeah, it's the Miramax logo. So I guess that's probably the best place to start if you got a different copy of this movie, if you live anywhere else in the world.
Yes. And there's Dimension.
Oh, God.
My 90s nostalgia right now.
Yeah.
Oh, and the music, the theme for Scream.
Mm.
Oh, similar type of theme.
The Hollywood sign.
We're in Hollywood.
Oh, this takes me back. What's
I know, it does, right?
It's still so 90s.
Indeed.
Even though it's like 2000, but whatever.
It is like a nostalgia throwback, because I think between like 98 and 2000, that is where very much my informative years as a horror fan, because I only just started getting into horror then. And of course, the first type of genre of horror I gravitated towards was the slasher films.
Yeah, it was definitely slasher because of pretty much Scream being like that gateway, because they talked about all these other films. And just talking about this movie right now, we start off with Cotton Weary, and as we know, when you start off a Scream movie with a character, they're going to die. And knowing when I was in the movie theater seeing this, I'm like, we're starting off with Cotton. If they're gonna kill him off, I'm gonna be so pissed. Needless to say, I was very pissed, because we all know he's gonna die.
Yeah.
How dare you kill off like such a beloved character now? Like, seriously, it's almost unforgivable. I just can't.
I guess they needed a shock. You know, like there's always something shocking that happens at the beginning of these movies. So I guess they thought, okay, this will be the shock for this one.
Yeah, I think almost in a way it's like all bets are off on, you know, the third one. So we will kill a beloved character.
Oh, yeah. And also, I'm obsessed with Liev Schreiber's outfit in this scene. This is quintessential 2000 outfit.
Oh, my God, it so is. Look how young he looks. How adorable.
I know. It's hard to be afraid of him, really, you know, because he's just such just this, like, baby face.
Yeah, he really is. Now, who was the one in the shower?
Oh, that was Kelly Rutherford. She was on Melrose Place at the time.
Melrose Place. And then,
Melrose Place.
What was the other show she was in, like, in the 2000s?
Ooh.
Was it Gossip Girl? Gossip Girl.
Yeah, that's right.
Serena's mom. I forgot the character's name.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, now he's got a rush in his big freaking car.
The cars. Wow, look at those cars.
Oh my gosh, she's a baby face.
And I like how her hair's already done up while she just got out of the shower.
Yeah, but maybe she won't make her hair. Oh, well, her makeup, yeah. But the hair, like, I can get the hair, because if you're not, like, washing your hair, I try not to get it wet in the shower.
Starting off this film, we learned so much what has happened to Cotton since, you know, Scream 2. It's like, I mean, after he got, was found innocent, he became a celebrity in his own right and has his own TV show, which has the most awesome name ever, 100% Cotton.
It makes sense because of how, you know, the direction of his character in Scream 2, where, you know, he just wanted something out of being falsely accused. Mm. And then I reckon his TV talk show would have totally been like a Jerry Springer.
Oh, yeah.
I think it would have been maybe like a Jerry Springer-Maury hybrid.
Mm.
On the back of that bus was an advertisement for one of the Stab movies.
Yes.
Because what other franchise can you have where they have horror movies about their horror movie?
Yeah. And I love that they're called Stab. I love that.
Stab. I also like that the original name for Scream was going to be Scary Movie, and that's what they called the parody.
The parody.
Yeah.
Which came out after this, a few months after this film, which is probably a good thing, because if Scary Movie came out before Scream 3, then I think people would not have been able to have taken anything that happened in Scream 3 serious. Although it is considered by a lot of people as like the silliest entry in the franchise.
It definitely is. You can tell there was production issues on this one.
Mm.
Like, they went in without a fully done script. There was no Kevin Williamson, from what I understand.
Yeah, they had a different writer come in, Aaron Kruger, who at the time had just written Arlington Road.
Good thriller, by the way.
Yeah, and then, of course, after this film, he would write the remake of The Ring.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. And,
which I'm not the biggest fan of that film, but maybe I'll revisit it at some point.
But I think the original. Yeah, but I think at the time, like, I guess in terms of like how all the pop culture references and horror film references and all that are sort of handled here, I think he did state in an interview like a while back, and I could be completely paraphrasing, by the way, that I don't think he said he was a fan of slasher films. So I think like this is kind of more of like an obligation kind of writing gig rather than something that he was fully committed to.
It almost feels like it's trying too hard to be like the other ones, but not at the same time. And this is what I think was really interesting with what they did with this film, with the killer using a voice changer to not just make that, you know, scary voice. He's, you know, pretending to be Cotton. And he was pretending to be someone else on the phone.
Yeah.
So there's a whole another level of trickery. Which, you know, I think is interesting because obviously as the years go on, technology changes. Hence, you know, Scream 4 kind of updates that as well.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Are we still on the TV?
I just got to watch myself on TV. Now, honey, you better not be murdered in there.
Bede, can we get you to dress up like Cotton Weary?
Yes, I need that outfit.
I wonder if that suit is 100% cotton.
It better be. Although I gotta say, I don't. You both have to agree. He is dressed up like one of the Backstreet Boys from the "I Want It That Way" music video.
Oh my gosh! To say NSYNC. I was gonna say NSYNC, not the Backstreet Boys, but yes,
he looks like he's dressed in like a 2000s boy band.
Yes.
I like that he's got the fire stick thing.
Poker.
Yeah. Oh, shit. You know what? Maybe the twist of Scream 5 is that Cotton Weary never actually died, and he's now the killer.
Justice for Cotton Weary.
Exactly.
Yes. That's our hashtag. Hashtag justice for Cotton.
We need Cotton Weary back, damn it.
Yes. And if anyone is watching the movie and following along, we are at the 8 minute and 22 seconds. And now, because she thinks he's been terrorizing her, she's attacking him. Look, I can't say
for sure. It's the boyfriend.
Yeah. I can't say for sure, but I'm pretty sure there was some pornos in that collection down there. Although, I think I saw Amadeus in the background.
Although, they must have a really weird sex life, because earlier she did say, like, Cotton, I don't want to play your stab games and stuff like that. So I don't know what's going on.
I don't know what he does. It's always behind you.
I remember as a teenager, I had my own. I actually had the Ghostface costume, like the whole get-up.
I had the mask. I still have the mask somewhere.
Yes, yes. And I love to see that they, you know, it's still popular because I still see people, like, dressed up as Ghostface.
Yeah. I think it's because it's so memorable and so different where, you know, it actually is so iconic in when you first see it, like you remember it. And it's kind of, you know, I think it managed to be that kind of iconic that it's instantly recognizable as its own thing. Whereas you had, like, I suppose Michael Myers wore William Shatner on his face. Jason had a sack and then a hockey mask. This is like totally its own thing.
Right, right.
And there's also Sydney.
And there's a simplicity to the costume as well that does make it memorable. It's not trying to be overdone. Because I remember, like, watching documentaries on the first Scream, like, they had different masks in mind for the first film, and all of them just looked so, like, overdone in terms of what type of mask they wanted to go with.
And this one just has a simplicity to it, but it's still frightening.
And it makes sense seeing that, you know, it is, the mask itself is based on the painting, The Scream.
Yeah, yeah.
And hence why they probably changed the title to Scream as well, because that would make a lot more sense.
I like how Sydney lives in seclusion with all this high security. And she's a women's crisis counselor because, you know, she wants to help others who have been tormented like she has.
And for someone who works as a crisis counselor, she's doing pretty well for herself. I mean, look how big this house is.
Look at that old freaking Mac. I remember those from high school.
I know, I wanted one so bad.
I know. You're so excited. I wanted one too. I was like, can I just grab it from school? But what color did you want?
Oh, I wanted red, because red's my favorite color.
I wanted the orange.
Oh, yeah. Oh. The orange was so cool.
It's those famous, it's those bags. Ew.
To be fair, like, I never actually thought her hair looked that bad. Because, you know, the 2000s had really bizarre hair.
That is true.
It's really, like, it's just really her bangs, honestly.
It's totally just so bizarre. But I love how they actually sort of evolve their looks in every film. Like, they look different. There's different hair.
I just want to, like, even them out for her.
Ugh, right? There is no rhyme or reason to that cutting job on the bangs. The police.
She goes out there and it's actually... Oh, wait, that's all. I was going to say it was going to be Dewey, but it's no, it's Patrick Dempsey.
I forgot he was in this.
I did too, actually, because I thought it was Dewey.
that damn sexy Patrick Dempsey. It was Patrick Swayze for a second.
Oh, Jesus. Was he McSteamy or McDreamy?
McDreamy.
Well, hello, McDreamy.
Yeah, he was McDreamy. Creamy, yeah.
Or as your bub likes to say, Marcy, McCreamy.
McCreamy. Oh, she likes both of them, so they're both a McCreamy to her.
But what's interesting, though, is Patrick Dempsey, he was actually cast at the very last minute, like legit the day before they started shooting.
Because
I don't know who they originally had in the cast, but I think it must have been someone they must have dropped out, and then he just sort of took the part at the very last second.
Uh-oh. Now she's going to freak out because it's happening again.
I was going to say that a giant comes out on stage and is like, it's happening again. That's my Twin Peaks reference for one episode.
Introduction. Stab three.
Is there any other, like, slasher... or, you know, horror franchise that legit has, like, the same cast in every film? Like, at least they've had Courtney Cox, David Arquette, and Neve Campbell in all of them.
Yeah, I was just sort of thinking that.
I think there is.
I mean
Elm Street, yeah, but it wasn't consistent. Look at the talent on display here, just saying.
Yeah, you've got Scott Foley, You got Lance Henriksen, who you've met, Marcy. Yes. And also Roger Corman.
It's the Rog. Happened to Scott Foley. He disappeared.
Actually, I was reading, apparently this film was actually Scott Foley's first ever film, because he had only done TV prior to this film.
Oh, that makes sense, because he was in Felicity.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you love to be in a room with Lance Henriksen? I mean, yes, it's amazing. And Roger Corman.
Yes. All the stories you would hear.
Justice right. for Randy, too.
Exactly.
Yeah. Why did you kill off Randy the best? She's probably off in the woods living like the fucking Unabomber. Ugh, anti-vax bitch, fuck off. I apologize for using the B word, that's mean.
Well, it is Jenny McCarthy, Marcy. I think in this case it's okay.
Oh my god! Isn't this Jenny McCarthy? Yes.
Sorry, I'll rephrase.
She is an
anti-vax cunt. Yes, I remembered she was in this, and I'm like, ugh.
And also, Emily Mortimer's in this movie, too.
I know, right?
And I think this might have been the first film I remember seeing her in, because I know she's a very well-regarded actress now.
Mm.
But I think this might have been one of the first big major roles, I think.
Honestly, don't remember. She was in something not long after this that was... Oh, I can't remember. I'm going to have to look her up now.
Now, look at this outfit from
Why
Gale.
Why did you wear that bead?
I might have to. I'll get a man version of that outfit, like the yellow jacket and pants and with the red shirt.
Yes.
With the bags.
Oh, she's got a spy cam going, because of course she does.
Is that Patrick Warburton?
That is Patrick Warburton.
Oh my god, I never realized he was in this. Holy shit, I never realized.
I found that just recently, Marcy, before Patrick Warburton was cast. You know who they were originally were in talks with to cast as his role as, like, Jennifer Jolie's bodyguard? Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Ah, yes. Parker Posey, who is just fantastic in this movie.
Oh, my God. She's amazing.
She really gets...
what this is.
Like, she really gets Courtney's like mannerisms, you know? Like,
yeah.
And then she's got like the hair and that, like, even their face structure, like their facial structure is similar.
Mm.
It's like you could tell, like, she's her own character, Jennifer Jolie, but you could definitely tell, like, she's going out of her way to try to copy all the mannerisms and style of Gale as well.
I like how they're doing, you know, the Stab 3 is meant to be the return to Woodsboro. So they all got that, like, original Scream look. So she's got, like, the weird Gale hair from Scream. Although I don't know what that guy is doing.
And that's Matt Cleese, who was in that episode of Masters of Horror we watched a while back, Marcy, Family. And like a lot of actors they considered for his part, because he plays Tom Prince, obviously a play on Freddie Prinze Jr.
obviously.
And I think a lot of the actors who tried out for his role, I'm just looking this up because I've got all the info here. Let me see. Okay, I'm still looking. Keep talking while I was just
looking up the cast, because I forgot, like, everybody in this freaking movie. yes. Scott Foley. sorry, my throat's all a bit funny.
I'm still looking for this. Oh, here it is. People who were considered for Tom.
That's you. It's in your purse.
That's all right. I was going to say people who were considered for Tom Prince were Paul Walker, Josh Hartnett, James Van Der Beek, and Jonathan L. Jackson.
Wow.
Okay, so all of the popular men of the late 90s, early 2000s.
Yes.
Yes, pretty much.
Oh, even Selma Blair was considered for Jennifer Jolie. I mean, she would have been good in the part.
Mm. She would have got it, I think.
I think so, yeah. Also, the Jay and Silent Bob cameo, which is my favorite thing ever.
And like, another person I've met and interviewed there.
Yes. Like, their cameo in this film, like, it is incredibly silly, but there's something just charming about it.
Yep. Oh, my dad's alive. I forgot.
Yeah. Luckily, this is a, like, scary movie in which the dad, like, loves drugs and shit. Quick, Cindy, hide the drugs. Flush the stash.
I have not seen Scary Movie for ages.
Yeah. Sorry.
Oh, jeez. Anyway.
But just watching this is just bringing back so much nostalgia.
Yeah, I know, right? It just feels like you're transported to the year 2000.
Psychos can't kill what they can't find. It's true, Sydney. It's true.
She's always got these lines.
Also, according to IMDb, Alicia Silverstone, Claire Danes, Alison Hannigan, and Eliza Dushku were considered for the role of Angelina Tyler, which Emily Mortimer plays in the film.
Interesting. You know what I remember her from now that came out like not long after this? It was the one with Bruce Willis, where he's a kid.
Oh, The Kid.
Yeah, The Kid, that one, yeah.
Yes.
Okay, she's seeing her dead mother.
What movie do you think they're like Wes Craven is referencing here with the mother? This seems like something out of an Italian horror film or something like
that. Yeah, almost. Almost is, isn't it?
Mm. Let me in, Sydney.
No, it's totally Salem's Lot. She's a vampire.
Mom, the window's open. You can just come through.
And it's amazing that it's the same actress and it was just a photograph.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they use that same, you know, person, actress, with the photos over the films. Like, it's very consistent in a weird way.
Well, that's a great thing about this franchise, is that it's very consistent. And like you said before, it's being that it's the same cast in every single entry. Like, the three main leads, Nev Campbell, Courtney Cox, and David Arquette. Like, it's very rare for a horror franchise to have the same actors appear in every single entry. I mean, even someone like, you know, Jamie Lee Curtis, who's been in quite a number of the Halloween films, but, you know, she'll probably appear, like, maybe one or two to back-to-back, and then, you know, then they'll focus on a new cast and that, and then she might come back at another point.
You know, if we had hindsight back in 2000... we really wouldn't have made Jenny McCarthy a thing.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, she's going to die now. And it is kind of very satisfying when you look back on it.
And she's killed by a person wearing a mask.
I know, how ironic, right? Imagine if they injected some vaccine in her.
I think someone out there will probably, like, take this scene and instead of a knife, it's just ghost face with it. With the vaccine.
Yeah, I think they should actually.
Like a syringe.
The syringe.
Even her hair is very 2000s.
Yep. Everything about this is 2000. Like, I remember the fashions and everything.
And that dude's got the soul patch, which was huge at the time.
Oh, the ball tickler.
Yes.
Everyone had one of those.
Yes.
True. Like, ridiculous. Ridiculous.
All the actors who are in this movie, all their pictures up there. That's the thing, though. Like, part of me just would like just to pause this film just to see, like, who else is starring in Stab 3. Like, this is one of those things, though, like, because this is around the time, because I imagine, like, Stab 1 and 2 are, like, were huge box office hits. But the question is, though, would Stab 3, given that, you know, since Jennifer Jolie, the character, was in the first two films, and the other actors who appeared in, I guess, the first Stab films, including Tori Spelling as Sydney Prescott, and they're not back for the sequel, would that make Stab 3 kind of like, you know, like a franchise that's on its way out, or would this be like an entry that just goes, I think direct to video?
It was the start of the decline for the Stab series, because as we saw in Scream 4, there's like a billion of them and no one cares.
Yeah.
They went all meta and shit. It's
true, you know? Like, of like, I love, well, I don't love all of the Halloween movies, but like, there are so many of them at this point, you know? And so many. And Friday, now that's my franchise, but like, there are so many of them, and so many of them, yeah, people just kind of like tune out, like, okay, so we're on what? 13? Is this 13? 13? Okay. Oh, yep. God, I want that poster, though.
What I think is also funny, too, at least this movie has a bit of inside jokes about itself, because it's, you know, the character of Sarah Darley, played by Jenny McCartney here, like, one of her things she's pissed off about at the moment, it's like, oh, you guys have rewrote the script again? And it's, you know, like, all the jokes about how basically the script for this movie just kept changing practically every single day.
Yep. It sure did. Has there been another goddamn rewrite? How the fuck are we supposed to learn our lines when there's a new script every 15 minutes? Like, that's pretty accurate for this movie.
Yeah. That was written from a very true place.
Yeah, Sarah. Not
good in this movie.
Obscuring time.
As long as as long as Ghostface says, give me a vaccine, it's okay if he kills me with a knife.
No, he's coming after her with that vaccine. That's why she's shitting herself.
Yes. That's the thing, though. Like, Jenny McCartney was in the Scary Movie sequels, right? I'm pretty sure she was. I think she was in number 3, from what I remember. She was at the beginning with Pamela Anderson, where they ripped off the ring. Although the thing is, though, like, I can't take her seriously in, you know, an actual Scream movie, because it feels like her character could have easily been from one of the Scary Movie sequels.
Yeah, she can't act. Right. I'm sorry. Yeah, she's just, And my mom really doesn't like her because, you know, she married her favorite Wahlberg.
Little Donnie Wahlberg.
She hasn't recovered since, and she's just not a fan. I don't blame her. It's Jenny McCarthy.
Actually, I was reading a year before. Apparently, another actor who was considered for Jennifer Jolie was Terry Hatcher.
Oh, okay.
What?
I think that working, to be honest.
Actually, a lot of the people, like, you know, like we talked about Selma Blair or Terry Hatcher playing Jennifer Jolie, I think they would have done pretty well in the part if they had it.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see it takes a certain kind of, like, you know, because of how that character is. But yeah, I could see, like, Terry Hatcher pulling that off pretty well, which would have been so funny.
I like how in this scene, like,
it's a vaccine.
Now, come back in 3 weeks for your second dose.
Wait, did he kill her by pushing her through the window, the glass window in that door, of that door?
I think she died from a mixture of the glass and the knife.
I think that might be it. Yeah, she probably landed on whatever glass was there, but then, of course, you know, Ghostface stabbed her in the back as well to finish it off.
I'm sorry, find out who did Courtney Cox's hair? Because it is so bad. Like, none of that looks like it doesn't near.
It was David Arquette as a joke.
Jesus.
But I was going to say before, like, what I liked about that scene where in the prop room, like, you see Jenny McCarthy trying to use weapons against Ghostface, but since they're all fake, they don't work.
I know, the rubber knife.
Yeah. And also another thing I think is what we were saying about having the cast and the same cast and everyone, but also having the same director direct most of the installments in a row as well.
Yeah, Wes Craven did, you know, 4 films. I mean, obviously he can't do another one because he's no longer with us, which is very sad. I do miss the beauty of Wes Craven all the time.
It's Wes Craven.
Amazing.
Yeah.
You know, filmmaker and just, you know, one of our many horror, I guess, grandfathers. But, you know, I think, you know, at least with Scream 5, I have the feeling that they will do him justice. But, yeah, I think Scream does that very rare thing where it is an actual film series. You know, it is like, I don't want to say like the Fast and the Furious, but in a way it's like Fast and the Furious in a weird way, because that sort of kept that main core cast and then added people along the way. Not that they had the same director every time, but you get what I mean.
Yeah. And also there's just a great chemistry between, you know, between Courtney Cox, David Arquette and Neve Campbell as well. Mm. Like the three of them together, they just do have such great chemistry. And I mean, we don't know what's going to happen in the fifth Scream film, but part of me feels like maybe one of them, it might die finally in the fifth one. And my heart is going to break if that does happen.
Yeah, I'm so scared that will happen. I love how these two play off each other. Like, it's no surprise from the first Scream they ended up together.
Mm.
I mean, yes, they're not together now, but they still managed to do these movies despite anything that was happening.
That's the thing, though, I was saying just before we recorded, and I think you would also agree with this too, Tamiko, like the whole Scream franchise is basically like represents each step of their relationship. Like you got the first film, which is like the first time they met, the second when they started dating, the third is when they're actually were married at the time they shot it. The fourth one was basically just as they divorced or just after their divorce. And now the fifth one basically just shows them being absolute besties who support each other.
Very bizarre.
Yeah, that is true. It was like a progression of them, of their love.
You know what's funny? I remember wearing a top like that in the 2000s.
Yeah, that's almost like God. A...
So different colors.
Yes.
I swear, like, Tori Spelling wore that exact same outfit in Scary Movie 3. It was the style at the time.
Mm.
You know, for someone who had got stabbed multiple times in the two previous films, including one which left an injury to his leg, he can walk around fine now. Do we?
I mean, he's still, you know, showing, you know, but...
Yeah, you know, he somewhat limped. Right there.
Yeah. I can't believe Patrick Warburton is in Scream 3 and I never realized.
I know, it's weird.
I feel, oh my God, I just can't. It's creeping me out.
That's one of my favorite things about going back to watch films, like, you know, we watched at, like, during the late 90s, early 2000s and finding, like, oh, so-and-so, who's, like, hugely popular now, was in this movie.
And that's what's his name? I forgot his name. Bloody hell.
He's, like, been in everything, but here's the thing, Marcy, and I have to tell you both this because this is going to blow your mind. That actor who plays Patrick Dempsey's partner, he is also the voice of Raphael.
I know that. That's why I was trying to think of what his name was.
Yeah, right, the Ninja Turtles movie, but I can't remember his name either. Patrick Dempsey's hair. He's had that hairstyle for like 40 years now.
So true.
I wish I had hair like that. What about an increased police
presence around Jennifer? She's the next one to get killed in the script. It's okay. You know, Like, that means you'd have to, like, wash it all the time and blow it out all the time. And, like, it just seems like a lot of maintenance.
That is true.
Get over his hair.
And I like the fact that, like, because they realize, oh, everyone's being killed by the order of the script. And then they realize, holy shit, we have, like, different scripts. So we don't know which exact script he's using.
I think they had many different endings.
Mm. I think. That, well, Wes Craven did say that they shot multiple endings, but he did not tell the cast which one they were going to use until the premiere.
Oh, okay. So no one knew who was the actual killer.
Yeah. Or at least, yeah, I think so, yeah. I'm not exactly sure. Like, there could be... That's the thing with this franchise, though, because, you know... I know in the second film they had to change killers because it got leaked out.
Right.
And so they probably had to do something like this again just so to hide who the actual killer is. She wasn't speaking
with me. I did not call Sarah. Oh my god, why they all look like they're kids in this movie?
They're all so young.
But yes, Bede, I knew that he's the... You know, the voice of, is it Donatello or Raphael?
Raphael, yeah.
Yeah, sorry. But I just could not think of his name. I'm like, he was in this? I had no idea.
Oh, yeah.
Patrick Dempsey looks like he's just out of high school. He's a hard Canadian 15 in this movie.
And he hasn't changed at all. He's just got a bit more Silver Fox looks and that's about it.
Oh, my God. He's a beautiful looking man.
Yeah.
Well, hi, doggy.
Hi, doggy.
But I'm just going to say it right now. The dog is actually the killer. You didn't give me any enough walks yesterday. I'm going to kill you.
And you didn't throw the tennis ball. You didn't throw the tennis ball. You cut off my testicles. Poor doggo.
Yeah.
Poor doggy.
I do agree with you, Marcy. I think adding the voice modulator, which changes different voices, is a great touch they added to this film.
Because it really makes everyone a suspect, right? Because you don't know. And then everyone's like, but I didn't do this. I mean, clearly we know who the killer is. And he's even like, wait, I didn't do that. Well, good acting.
And the funny thing is, though, like Scott Foley, who we, of course, all know is the killer in this film, would have just used his regular voice in that scene with Jenny McCartney before he killed her.
You know, this could have been a very clever marketing tactic for the movie. There's all these murders around it, and then it goes, surprise, we're all still alive.
Exactly. It could have been like an April Fool's Day type of situation. I'm going to use my tiny little gun against the killer.
I like that her wardrobe in this movie is basically my wardrobe for the last 2 years in lockdown.
Yes.
Tank top, comfy pants.
Yeah.
Flip flops.
Yeah. Oh my god, Joe Swanson, go away. Or Kronk, go away.
Well, he has to be careful because Ghostface will actually put him in a wheelchair very soon. Stab, stab, stab.
Stab, stab, stab. I'm pretty sure that in the year 2000, I had that hairstyle. My hair was like short like that, all pixie-like. Yep. That was me in 2000. I was Emily Mortimer.
Swoopy bang.
Yep. I had that hair. Exact hair.
And she's so cute in this movie.
And then it grew out.
Yeah. I just realized I wrote, because our chat for this, on Skype, I wrote Sydney wrong, so I apologize for that. It was an I, not with a Y.
Hello, Sydney.
All right, me and my bangs are here to save the day.
I feel sorry for whoever had to play Gail Weathers in the movie about this story and have to have that hair.
Now Gail's wearing another iconic outfit. She's got like leather sort of shiny leather red pants and then just like a little blazer and
it was completely the look at the time.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I mean, and that turtleneck.
Yeah, yes. I know.
Yeah.
I hate turtlenecks. They just can't do them.
Yeah, she raided Cut Weary's closet for that turtleneck.
She did. She got possession of his clothes. I love how she's all jealous. She thinks people see that as weak. So very cute. All right, just for the people listening, we are at 39 minutes, 55 seconds. So if you're watching along, you know where we're at. As we're watching the movie, Gale is spying on Dewey and Jennifer Jolie.
Gail's all like, I just like to watch you guys.
She's the Denny right now.
Yes. Even Jennifer Jolie's hair is like weird in this movie too.
Jennifer Jolie is the worst, most obvious name ever.
And not only that, because Emily Mortimer's character is Angelina Tyler.
Jesus.
They could have... See, this is about probably this much effort that, like, Aaron Kruger, the screenwriter, put into references. Feel
it's a bit weird that her name is Jennifer Jolie. Jennifer Aniston. Angelina Jolie. Brad Pitt. It predicted what was going to happen.
Oh, you're right. That's amazing, and I never even thought about it.
Nope. Me either.
There you go.
See, this is why you're always smart, Marcy.
Courtney Cox starred with Jennifer Aniston in Friends.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I think another thing what's interesting about this film, like at least compared to the first two films, like the violence in this film isn't as bloody. And I think there's a good reason for that, because I think this movie, at least, I don't know if it was around the same time it was shot or afterwards, the Columbine Massacre happened, and I know a lot of films and TV shows kind of tried to scale down the violence in a lot of projects. So I think Scream 3 was one of the films that definitely kind of suffered from that. Obvious Photoshop. And I like how this movie, we learned so much about Sydney's mother, because we only...
Yeah. It all goes back to Maureen. Didn't he also play the Tick?
He did play the Tick. And not the same year he made this movie, Marcy, he was also in the Aussie film The Dish.
Oh, shit. It's so funny because, like, he'd been in stuff and I just never really paid attention until... probably like Family Guy and The Voice, and then I'm like, wait a minute, that's Kronk from The Emperor's New Groove. And then suddenly he's like, oh wait, he was a Tick, and then he's this and that. I'm like, fucking hell,
holy shit. Actually, I think Emperor's New Groove came out the same year as this movie, so Patrick Warburton had like three major film projects the same year.
And I guess being stabbed in the back would foreshadow Joe Swanson.
Yes.
I'm just saying.
That's why he needs to come back for Scream 5 and he's actually in a wheelchair.
He should just come back as Joe Swanson animated.
Yes. What is that thing on the table? What is that?
It's a like chia pet.
Giant chia pet. It's like a huge... it's like somebody cut out a piece of a lawn and put it on the table.
I'm trying not to laugh and cough at the same time. Jennifer, I love her wardrobe.
How can they not see them both walking right there?
I know! Yeah, holster your gun. I'm Joe Swanson. Jesus, what a stupid
death. Not Patrick Warburton. He only had one day left till retirement.
Fuck off, I make that joke.
Quick, lock all the doors.
Was this movie around the time David Arquette was WCW champion?
It happened the same year, Marcy, along with releasing Ready to Rumble.
Why does he look like he's, you know, a basic 30-year-old, yet in Ready to Rumble, he looks like a 15-year-old boy?
He only had to shave off his moustache.
Hey, remember fax machines?
What's a fax machine? Also, why does Matt Cleese look like Greg Sestero in this film?
I don't know. He's got that iconic hair, though.
I like how they sort of have to go, like, they're being sent these pages of the script, and they're, like, debating whether to go outside or inside because they don't know where the killer is.
Oh, my God.
This movie
she basically wants to know what happens.
See, Matt Cleese, you dumbass, now you're going to die.
Whoever. Boom.
I need a lighter. We'll turn on a light. Just go outside.
Whoever smells the gas. What a dumb shit.
Wow, the whole house is blew up.
Yeah, so I don't leave the gas on, me.
Yeah, but
you know, they purposely put the gas smell in gas so you can smell it and know it's dangerous.
Yeah, I know that, but I mean, the whole, wouldn't it just, at least that, since the gas was in the kitchen, wouldn't it only just blew up the kitchen, or would it just
Maybe he had COVID and couldn't smell it.
Okay, that's a good point.
I mean, it was years before COVID, but whatever. This movie predicted, you know, the love triangle of Hollywood's golden age.
Yes.
Not golden age, whatever. Whatever I'm on about, I don't know. I usually don't know.
Now,
no,
look, turn around.
Oh, well, that's the end of that.
Now I'm going to
do it, you doofus.
That's why he's Detective Doofy or whatever.
It's hard to hate Dewey in these films because he's just that, like, he's such a doofus, but he has a charm to him.
Yeah. Completely. And he loves vacuum cleaners. Oh, no, wait, yes. That's Doofy.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Dewey loves vacuum cleaners too.
I mean, he might.
I shot him 6 times!
They can have a bulletproof vest, which none of these people wear. I mean, come on, people. They should be wearing chainmail, head to toe.
Face touch.
Yes. Jesus, just love.
Oh, Jesus.
Parker Posey. Well, this was around the time Parker Posey, because she was like the indie movie queen, and this was like one of the rare, like, she would pop up in big mainstream films, and when she did, like, it was just glorious.
Yeah, like Josie and the Pussycats.
Ah, red herrings, trying to make us suspect who. Actually, I think in an early draft of the script, actually, Angelina was actually meant to be the killer.
Oh.
Because I think she actually knew Sydney in high school, and she hated Sydney for some reason. I think that was the motivation, but I could be completely wrong.
I love how it's this mystery.
Yeah, well, actually, I think, now I realize, I think the actor who was actually considered for Patrick Dempsey's role, I don't know if he was cast or not, but then had to drop out, or he was just more in consideration, was David Boreanaz.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense too, to be fair.
Mm.
You know who they should have put in this movie as the cop?
Who?
Who's that?
The other Scott Feldman.
Ooh.
Ooh. Yeah,
I would have liked that.
leave out Kerry Russell for I don't know what reason. But you could have had the boys in it.
I'm just going to say, like, why wasn't Kerry Russell cast in one of the 2000s?
She could have been.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but they ruined it when they cut her hair. Why would you ruin her hair?
Yeah, they were
like... The whole point of the show wasn't about anything else. It was just the hair.
I think they realized, like, we have Courtney Cox and her bags in this movie. We don't need two people with bad hairstyles in this film at the same time.
Wait. Are her bangs... Her bangs are fuller and that, like, they seem to be, like...
Right.
Wait.
Yeah, right? They seem to look slightly better. But I think it would be because they probably reshot this movie, or not reshot the movie, but they didn't have a script or knew what they were doing.
It could be a wig. This could be a reshoot.
She never had this bad hair in Friends. And I've seen Friends way too many times.
And Neve Campbell, she's actually 60 years old here. She just doesn't age.
Yeah, she looks the same.
Exactly,
I mean,
yeah.
even with the new Scream trailer, I watched that. It's like, no, like, that's just Neve Campbell like 40 years ago. Like, she has not aged one bit. She has aged gracefully.
She's the best.
And that's why, because Cynthia Prescott is one of the best final girls ever.
Mm-hmm. And Neve Campbell rules.
Exactly.
And you know, she's wearing the necklace from Scream 2.
Yeah, I think I watched a video recently where someone pointed that out, and it was the same one that Jerry O'Connell gave her.
Yeah.
And I did not realize that until the video.
No, I noticed that, I think, when I first watched this movie.
Yeah, well, it's a good little touch because it sort of realized that, like, you know, with Jerry O'Connell's character, like, she was deeply in love with him and like, she still has a torch for him. And maybe probably still does because, like, based on number four, and I'm presuming number five, she hasn't been with anyone else since.
Mm-hmm. Maybe she's too traumatized.
Yeah. I suppose after, like, four incidents with a Ghostface killer, like, you would probably have trust issues with a lot of people.
I like how this cop has, like, movie posters on his office.
Well, he's got a good taste.
With a computer that's, like, 20 years old in this movie. It was 20 years old when they filmed this movie.
Well, he's got good taste because he's got a Bela Lugosi movie up on the wall. We're gonna do the backstory on Maureen and find out what happened to her.
Mm-hmm. All right. Our timestamp again is 52:35. We're pretty much halfway through the movie.
My favorite cliche, and whenever they go to scenes in Hollywood and, like, studios and all that, it's like they go drive down or walk down like a laneway, and there's, like, people wearing costumes everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Always.
It's hilarious. It just makes me laugh all the time.
Ugh, the fashions are just bringing back memories.
Yeah, I know. We were all wearing these clothes.
Hey, it's Wiener Dog.
It's Heather Matsurazo, I think. I probably butchered her last name.
Well, you didn't butcher it as badly as she got butchered in Hostel 2.
Well, that is true. And she plays Randy's younger sister.
I think it's a very cute little cameo, because who doesn't love her? She's the best.
Yes. And, of course, we had to get Randy back in this movie somehow.
No, why did you kill him? How ridiculous.
I think in hindsight, they kind of, I guess they do realize, yeah, we should never have killed Randy off. Even though, like, Jamie Kennedy is, like, an annoying dipshit these days, but, you know, like, Randy himself as a character is awesome.
Yeah. These movies are the reason anyone knows who he is.
Yeah, exactly.
See, the reason he died is because he lost his virginity.
That is true. He didn't follow the rules and he died.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the thing though. Like all the rules, like in everything from the first film, the second film, and now him explaining like how trilogies work. They're pretty much all accurate.
Hmm. I guess they kind of like, you know, they figured let's have someone like the Randy character, and they kind of did that with is it Kirby?
Yeah, Kirby.
In Scream 4, kind of the more knowledgeable on movies person.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I'm going to tell you all, I'm going to give you a massive exposition dump, so listen up.
Yeah, exactly. Remember videotapes?
What's a videotape? I like how the videotape... Oh, sorry, Tabitha, go ahead.
Oh, I know, I was just going to say, but now, you know, VHS and, you know, VHS players... are hot commodities.
It's like, you know, this weird nostalgia comeback, like with vinyl. Maybe not to the extent that they'll like start putting things out there again on VHS, like sometimes they do, but I think, yeah, the collectability of it is crazy now.
I don't know if you go to specific like places and all that, you can buy deep Blu-ray / VHS combo like machines and that,
so you can play. I've still got my VHS player, so
I do as well. Well, that's my cameo. Well, that's the end of my cameo. I better go home now.
I used to have hair like that too. I used to do all the swirls and the butterfly clips.
Like butterfly clips.
How good were butterfly clips? I think they need to make a comeback. Do you hear me? 2022 butterfly clips.
Yes.
Bringing it back. Me and Tamika, we're doing this.
We are.
Now we're off. Now we're off to the.
I think I still have some of them.
I found ones that were very similar, but they weren't quite the same. So I'm going to have to keep looking. But we're doing it. This is happening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I want to investigate too. I want to watch you investigate. I'm a method actor.
Can they do a buddy cop movie?
Oh my god, they should.
They really should.
There should have been like a spin-off. Like they should not have killed Jennifer Jolie, and then they could have like a spin-off movie where Gale Weathers and Jennifer Jolie team up to solve mysteries.
Oh my god, they totally should have. But I'll be just, you know, happy with a Courtney Cox and Parker Posey buddy cop movie.
That'd be awesome. Amazing. I think we should go pitch this movie like after the podcast.
Yeah, I think we have to. I'll be right back. I need to go to the bathroom and refill my drink and all that, so I won't be long. You peeps keep doing the podcast and the movie.
Indeed.
Throw some facts and stuff.
Well, we're up to probably one of the biggest cameos in this whole film, which the late, great Carrie Fisher makes an appearance. Who's playing a character who's not Carrie Fisher, but looks exactly like Carrie Fisher. And apparently from what I've read, and again, I could be completely wrong, but I believe Carrie Fisher, because back in the 2000s, she actually was a script doctor. So she did script doctoring on a lot of films. And I believe she actually did script doctoring on this film and even wrote this scene as well. Which I think is kind of hilarious, being that it's like Carrie Fisher poking fun of herself.
Which is so cool. And it seems, and of course she would be like down to earth enough to do that, you know, not take herself so seriously.
Oh yeah, exactly. Like you get, even like all the interviews I've seen with Carrie Fisher over the years, like, she was someone who never took herself seriously at all. Like, she wasn't afraid to, like, make fun of herself as well. Oh, we know one of the scripts for this film is around here somewhere. We've got, like, 15 different scripts for this film.
Oh my gosh, Burt Reynolds.
I like how we find out Jennifer Jolie's real name in that quick little sort of scene.
Jurgenstern?
Yeah, Jurgenstern. I think it was Judy Jurgenstern? Yeah.
Yeah, Jurgenstern.
Yeah, I probably would change it too to a much better stage name if I was an actor.
Mm-hmm.
Cops everywhere. That's a good little touch there, being that having her hand tremble like that, that's a good little touch to add, like, you know, knowing that she's facing another traumatic event again, especially after everything that has happened to her for the past few years.
Yeah, and she just finally thought, like, okay, I can have somewhat of a normal life.
Hmm. That's the thing, though, like I was saying before, like, with everything that has happened to her in the four films, like, I think she knows, like, it's never gonna stop. Like, hence why, you know, it's happening again for her in the fifth Scream film.
Right.
Like, but it seems like she's more prepared now. Or she's always, like, prepared for something like this to happen again.
Mm-hmm. I'm surprised that house that she has, like, isn't set up like the house from Home Alone with, like, traps and stuff.
well, to be fair, we haven't, maybe it is, but we just never saw that part.
True.
If I was Cindy, I would definitely, without a doubt, set up my house to be like the Home Alone house. Set up traps anywhere so there's no ghost face coming in or anyone.
Exactly.
It just takes me back watching this film because, like I was saying earlier, like the late 90s, early 2000s were like my informative years as a horror fan because I was getting into the genre and, you know, you had all these slasher films that were out at the time, you know, like the Scream films, but also I Know What You Did Last Summer and Urban Legend and a whole bunch. And, you know, just watching films like this from this period again, it just gives me a lot of nostalgic feelings.
Absolutely, yeah. It's different than when, you know, you make a film now and try to make it look like a period film, you know, it's just not quite the same. It still feels like current day, you know, but these films, there's none of that. Like this was made in the, you know, early 2000s.
Yeah. It's kind of like, even though I did really enjoy this film, Fear Street 1994, like, I think it did a good job with at least capturing the vibe of a 90s slasher film, but at the same time, that it doesn't quite sort of nail it in a way. Yeah. Because, like, you know, the 90s and, you know, 2020s are, like, you know, they're different time periods, so they're going to have their, like, those periods are going to be reflected differently in how they were made. Like, you can definitely have films that definitely try to go for that same approach, and for most part, most of them do, at least on a technical level, but at least in terms of the actual vibe, that's a little bit more trickier to pull off.
Absolutely.
But I do like this scene in particular because it has Sydney stumbling on the set of Stab 3 and, like, looking around and seeing all, like, all these sets from all the events that have happened to her in the first film. And
in her life, yeah. And, like, have played a part in her trauma. And, like, here they are making, a silly movie out of it. And calling it Stab, no less.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that is so cheesy, you know?
Oh yeah, that's another thing I'm kind of surprised. I guess if they redid Scream today, I mean, anyway, outside, you know, with the new one coming out, that could be something interesting to look into, is like how Gale writes, like after the events of the first Scream film, Gale writes his book about the Woodsboro murders, and then that becomes like this big Hollywood film. And it kind of makes you wonder, like, where are they, is this about trying to accurately portray the events that happened, or is this more of just making more of it, or at least exploiting a real life event just to make a, I guess, a cheap horror film?
Oh yeah, very much just exploiting a real life, you know, thing to make it a horror film.
Yeah.
Because I mean, people do that. People absolutely do that.
Oh yeah, definitely, definitely. And you know, some definitely go out of respect, but other times it's definitely not. But I think that's kind of an interesting thing they kind of would have they could have explored a little bit more. I know they sort of mentioned it a little bit in the second film. But they never really sort of, but the characters never really seem to be too bothered by the fact that a movie, like a slasher film, was being made about their, that was based on events that happened to them.
At least they at least get some money out of it.
Oh yeah, exactly. Like, I can imagine, like, Sydney's house, like, she probably gets some kind of residuals or something from that, like, as a compensation for all the things that have happened to her.
I would hope.
Whee! Oh, just threw Ghostface on the bed. And even though this is a set, Sydney knows, like, it's dumb to run up the stairs from a killer. That's what she still does even in this, in the third film.
Mm-hmm. Like, don't run up, run out.
Exactly.
Why do you do that? Like, I mean, I know, like, you gotta keep this movie going. I get it.
Now,
sorry, I'm here.
Yeah, I was saying to Tamika before, I want to be interested to hear what you think, Marcia. Like, given like these stab films are based on true events, like one thing I think it would have been interesting to kind of delve into, and they do a little bit in the second film, is like how, you know, everyone who went through the experience of Scream felt like how these events are being made for, you know, like a mainstream horror film, like if it felt like exploitive or something to it, like taking a real life tragedy.
Yeah, oh, definitely. I think it has a bit of that to the films themselves. So they kind of add that like part in where it's almost saying like, you know, maybe you probably shouldn't make movies about real events so quickly, or there's certain ways you can go about it. I think there's a bit of that in there.
Yeah, kind of like maybe if they waited a while, maybe a couple of years first before they made a film on it, instead of like, because from what I remember, like Scream 2 takes place 2 years after the first. So that's a pretty quick succession for, you know, a movie to be made on hot off the heels of those events happening.
So when you first saw the film, who did you think the killer was?
Oh, that's a good question. Who did you think it was, Tamika, when you first saw Scream 3?
Oh, wow. Honestly, I can't even think back that far. Like, I think by the time Scream 3 came out, I don't even remember, honestly.
I thought it was Patrick Dempsey's character.
Yeah, that's what who I thought as well. At least one of the suspects I had in mind.
Oh, really? So you two thought that it was Patrick Dempsey?
Yeah, because you don't really suspect Roman because you don't see him that much.
Yeah, and also he gets fakes his own death towards the end of the film as well. So you don't really suspect any of it.
I honestly didn't. I didn't suspect any of them.
I forgot Lance Henriksen was in this movie.
Apparently, I was reading Christopher Walken was also considered for his role as well before he was cast.
Oh, Jesus. That would have been a bit too much, I think.
Wow, it's the Ghostface killer, and he's trying to kill me. Wow.
Wow. Wow.
Excuse me. Sorry.
Wow.
That's wild.
Well, it's obvious, like, Lance Henriksen's character, obviously, is a based a little bit on Roger Corman. But I would say, from what I've heard, a little bit of that fuckwit, Harvey Weinstein, might have been an inspiration for this character as well. Particularly when we find out more about his relationship with Maureen Prescott. And you find out.
Okay.
Because you sort of find out that basically, like, she's like this up and coming actress. He's this big Hollywood hotshot producer slash executive. And pretty much, like, you took advantage of her. So, you know, so she can have a movie role and all that.
Ew.
Yeah, I know.
Ew to heart.
But then when we get to his house, and again, another thing that was pointed out to me that was kind of disturbing, but we'll get to that later in the movie once we get to the last act. But of course, you know, Lance Henriksen's always awesome no matter what.
Yes, and he's an awesome human being.
Exactly.
Who winked at me for 2 days straight because he's just so nice and being friendly. Because we had lovely conversations and interviews and just, you know, got along very well.
Oh, that's so great.
I know. He's just a very sweet person. He really was. Oh, so he's trying to excuse sexual abuse. Lovely.
Sounds like it.
Jesus.
So this movie probably more, at least in some aspects, more relevant now in what's been happening in the last few years than we initially first realized when it came out.
I mean, it's kind of like, you know, that hidden thing that you kind of know exists, like that, you know, how people get through in Hollywood is, you know, doing those things. But then, you know, as years have gone on, we found out a hell of a lot more about this, and it's more fucked up than we ever thought.
Indeed.
I mean, I know that I've heard, you know, rumors back in the day. I remember, you know, like, people making, like, comments about how creepy he was. But certainly, like, you're not, you know, thinking just full on. And, you know, not that being a creeper is a creeper, because no, but just, like, full on, just predator. Like, wow.
That's the thing, though. Like, I always knew of his reputation of being a complete asshole and basically when it came and being a tyrant on movie sets, particularly in post-production of films, because he had the name of Harvey Scissorhands, because he would just cut up movies and, like, ruin them. So basically when all the, you know, the stories of his sexual abuses came out, a part of me was like, you know what, after hearing so many horrible stories about him, I'm not surprised at least.
Yeah, it's kind of like that.
Yeah.
It's like, ugh, disgusting.
Apparently, reading up, to move away from the conversation, even though it's a very dark conversation we're talking about, but, you know, it had to be said. Kate Hudson was cast in this movie, but she was replaced before principal photography even started. And apparently the indication this was happening because on the back of the VHS box cover of the film Desert Blue, which he starred in, it had the listing as being starring in the upcoming Scream 3. But it never specified like which character she was originally cast as. Some suggested it was either as Angelina or even Sarah Darling, Jenny McCartney's character.
It would have been interesting to see her play Sarah Darling.
Yeah, I think she would have been pretty good. And I think that being that this film came out the same year as Almost Famous, that would have been a kind of an interesting experience going from Scream 3 to Almost Famous and getting an Oscar.
Very interesting.
And another thing, I think there was this, I don't know if it was in the scene back where we saw Scott Foley talking to Lance Henriksen, or it might be later in the film, that he's complaining like, oh, I don't want to make a horror film. I want to make something like a serious love story and all that. Apparently that's kind of an in-joke because like that's what Wes Craven wanted to do. Before he would make Scream 3, he wanted to make a non-horror film, which ended up being Music of the Heart.
Oh, I never knew that.
And of course, it's like, I'll do Scream 3 if you let me make this like drama with Meryl Streep.
Like love drama? Oh, wow.
Yeah. I think that was his first and only non-horror film that he made throughout his career.
And it's really good. It's a good movie.
Yeah.
It's a really enjoyable movie. I liked it.
We're going to go to a party.
Well, why not?
And also all the new metal soundtrack. Or at least I'm kind of now, maybe again it might be nostalgia, but just like hearing people talk about movies from the late 90s, early 2000s lately, I'm just remembering all the great soundtracks they all had.
Definitely.
I just got nostalgia for them all. And Roman, well, he's just a great big nerd. Look at him.
Oh, the creepy screening room.
And nobody seems to be creeped out by any of this.
Yeah, I don't know why, but it's weird. There's a psycho killer on the loose, and you want to go traipsing
around this gigantic mansion? Have you ever actually seen the Stab movie? Every time this this man knows what he's talking about. Nobody listens to him. He's basically our Randy replacement, and nobody listens to him, and then people die.
You're not sticking. Wait up. We're
gonna stay here and wait for some. We'll be right back. Oh, he said it. We'll be right back.
That's the one thing you never say.
Exactly. See, I learned so much from about how to live life from the Scream films. I never say I'll be right back.
I mean, I do, but you know, I won't say it if I know there's a killer somewhere.
Actually, I kind of take it back. I thought that Parker Posey, I can never remember anyone's, like, unless you're like the main characters in the movie, I can never remember characters. But Parker Posey, I did think that maybe it was her because like she, like, you know, she kind of, like, took her character too far, and, like, she just, I don't know, like, she got, like, too into it, you know? And so maybe she was, like, so she thought, like, you know.
She would make sense, too, yeah.
Yeah, I did, I definitely did think that it was her for a while, and then I don't want it to seem like a cliche, like, and then there was a moment in the movie where I, like, figured it out, and I was like, yeah, it's totally, like,
It was another little Easter egg just before.
But I did think that it was Parker Posey for a while. I did. Because I don't know. Like, she's just it makes something sense about her personality.
Yeah. And when he opened up that, like, prop coffin, the little skeleton had a dark red and green, like, jumper thing. So it was like a Freddy Krueger jumper was mixed in with it. Or sweater, whatever you want to call it. Well, yeah.
Well, that's the figure, though. It was that scene there that made me think, oh, it probably isn't the Roman character because he's down there looking around and stuff. So you wouldn't think of him as the killer.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
But then again, you'd be like, he could see, like, he's going down there, he sees the coffin, says, you know what, I'm going to pretend I'd kill myself and just hide out in this coffin until someone finds me to get the trail off me.
I love how they put their fingerprints on everything.
Yes. Dumbasses.
Yeah, seriously. There's DNA evidence on that.
It's like the DNA. What is DNA?
This ruined any potential crime scene movies. What the fuck is she wearing?
Actually, I was reading in trivia. Apparently, David Arquette was the one who suggested to Courtney Cox to cut her hair with those bangs.
Oh, no. Why? Now I know why they got divorced.
And the reason...
It was David's idea.
The thing is, apparently he said to her, you know, you should cut your hair like Betty Page. And that's why she did it. Because now I can see the Betty Page comparison.
Yeah, you can see it. And her hair is so dark. I don't remember her hair. Well, yeah, no, it was that dark. It was that dark.
And David Arquette confirmed this in an interview on Entertainment Tonight last year. So the truth finally came out 20 years later.
You know, if it was just done, like, without it all over the place, like, just a nice, straight, proper, like, bangs or fringe, whatever you call want to call it. Yeah, perfect.
There better not be any dead bodies in here.
But see, we never saw him get killed, so that should have been
obvious. Is true. That is true.
Mm-hmm. We've seen everyone else get killed.
That's why I'm always of the firm belief anytime I watch a film and TV show, if you see someone who looks like they're about to get killed, but you never actually see them get killed, it's most likely they're alive.
I mean, they tricked us in the first scream because we saw the fake death.
Oh, another fun fact, this same house was also used in Halloween H2O as well. Because I think it was
used... I can see it.
Yeah, because this hallway, I believe, from what I remember, because it's been a while since I've seen Halloween H2O, is like one of the ones where Laurie faces Michael, like when he comes out of the balcony, the rafters, yes. I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
And as we found out... The character of Angelina did sleep her way to get a role.
Yep.
Well, maybe she didn't sleep her way to get the role, but she was definitely put in that position.
Yeah, definitely. And even, like, Jennifer Jolie mentioned that she slept with Roman as well at some point. Maybe not for this film, but somewhere in the past.
That was so creepy, seeing her get, like, her body being, like, slid away slowly like that.
I like Steph, how that was good.
Nice work.
I like how Ghostface, like, that he just jumps out, is like, hey, and they're all like, wah, and they run away. Smack.
Kale, you gotta do better than that.
You would have to hate me. You would have to hate being Ghostface with all the amount of injuries you'll get if you're being attacked. And like,
and all the secret passages in this house.
Yep.
Which he just found one.
And he pulls the rug underneath him.
Yeah, if that fall didn't kill him, then...
Literally pulling the rug out from under him.
Yep. Literally.
And then out the... Whoa! And then out from the balcony. But also another thing too, because we remember, because the first two films had two killers, so we're thinking like maybe there's like more than one killer as well.
And this one changed it to be one.
No, it's just the one dude. Which I guess is kind of a twist itself, because you think there's going to be more based on. Okay, now here's the creepy CD, because you got this weird. It's a see-through mirror, but if you look behind Jennifer, there's actually a couch behind her. So that's basically what I think the video I was seeing the other day is fine. That's actually the casting couch. So yeah, it adds another layer of creepiness to this whole scene. Or at least even more so to Lance Henriksen's character.
Well, it's a weird room where you can watch people do things. As well as having a couch.
Yep. See, you saw the couch back there?
Mm-hmm.
Oh no, she's dead. Who am I going to make my cop spin-off movie with now?
Oh.
She could, like, when they were shooting the windows out, she could have, like, need Ghostface like the groin or something and then gone through one of those windows that was shot out. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, those windows wouldn't have been like too strong.
He shot out three windows. She was like standing right next to them.
Whoop.
Oof.
Oh, good thing my bangs are okay.
Leave her bangs alone. I mean, I don't know why I'm saying that. I've been making fun of them the whole time.
Actually, another thing I think is interesting about this film is, like, Cindy isn't in this movie that much. Like, I bet any money if you put, like, all of Neve Campbell's scenes, like, count how many times she's in the movie, she's probably only in it for, like, maybe less than 15 minutes.
Yeah. And our time stamp is 1 hour 26 30 seconds. Just putting it out there.
Because, you know, Gail and Dewey have... sorry, Tamika, go ahead.
Oh, no, it's okay. I was just saying that I can imagine, you know, being a fan of these movies and, like, realizing, wait, Sydney is, like, hardly in this, you know?
And feeling kind of way
about that, you know?
Well, this is interesting. I'm reading again. This is from IMDb, so whether this is factual or not. There was an alternate opening that was... Good thing the butt of the knife hit him in the head and not the other way around.
It still managed to knock him out.
Dewey, you doofus. Like, this is the thing, though. Like, watching this movie, you can see where, like, the scary movie part could easily come into play. Maybe it's because of how silly and more comical this third film is. Like, it's easy to kind of sense that.
It has such a different feel to the other two.
Yeah, and I think that was deliberate, but like I said earlier, because this was, like, post-Columbine. So I think they kind of wanted the violence to tone down, or at least the studio wanted the violence toned down, but also kind of give it a more comical flavor so it's not like too scary or intense and stuff like that.
I think this is where you're meant to suspect it's Kincaid.
Because
he's got all this stuff on Sydney, which is kind of creepy.
And somehow he got that photo of her from Scream 2.
Yep.
But what I was going to say before is an alternate opening was written but never filmed. The original opening scene contained Sydney Prescott and a friend of hers alone in her house in a different state, getting ready to watch a video. Unknownst to Sydney, the killer calls Sydney and her friend, claiming that he is in the house watching them, which turns out to be true. The killer jumps out of the closet and attempts to attack a frightened Sydney and her friend. Sydney, however, pulls a gun out and shoots the killer several times. Upon unmasking him, the killer turned out to be a fan who was pulling a prank on Sydney.
Oh, okay.
I think that would have been an interesting way to open a Scream film. Showing, like, again, like, the trauma that she has faced throughout the last few films. Like, our society's obsession with the stab films and, like, them going too far. And also what would happen if, you know, Sydney accidentally murdered somebody who was just playing a joke on her.
But they kind of did that whole watching a movie couch thing with Scream 4.
Yeah, I could see it being...
quite interesting, yeah.
Yeah, I could definitely see, like, maybe they kind of repurpose that ending, I mean, that opening for Scream 4 instead.
Like a take on it.
Because
the start of that movie, you're like, when does this actually start?
I know, it's even more meta than you would think it would be.
Yeah, I kind of want to watch it now.
I actually have not seen the 4 film since it actually came out. So
I think I've seen it twice. Sort of the cinema on opening day, and then I think when it came to streaming.
Yeah, but I know all of us are going to be rewatching this entire series in the lead up to the new film.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Oh yeah.
I never watched the TV series, so I have no idea about
it. I heard the TV series was good. Like, it starts off a bit wonky, but it gets better as it goes along.
And how does it fit into any of this?
I think it's basically a reboot. Like, it's sort of its own thing. Like, nothing tied back to the films.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
So there's no, like, Sydney or characters. Like, it's a whole bunch of new characters. But you were saying, Marcy, which was the first one, like, of the series did you see in the cinema?
It was number 2. I went with my cousin and my mum, because my mum liked the Scream.
And what about you, Tamika?
The only one that I saw in theaters was Scream 4.
Oh.
I actually caught a matinee of it. Like, I had to... I was a nanny at the time, and I caught a matinee of it. Like, and it ended, I mean, the timing. It ended right as I was supposed to, like, I had, like, 10 minutes before I had to pick her up from school. So it was intense. Like, I was so into the movie, and then I looked at my watch, you know? I completely lost track of time. Oh my God, I gotta go. But I just stayed and watched the rest of the movie.
I think for me, the third film was the first of the series I saw in the cinema, but I could have almost seen the first two. And I'll explain why. Because back when, I think I've been a bit about 12 or 13, like, I was not into horror at all. I was still scared of horror. And I remember when the second movie was about to come out, my local cinema back in Cobar, they were actually going to do a double feature of the first one and then show the second film. So one of my cousins was like, oh, let's go see this movie. And I was like, a bit apprehensive about it. So I went, and before even the movies actually start, I actually had a panic attack and I had to leave the cinema.
Oh, poor Bede.
So I left the cinema and ended up watching those two movies.
Aww.
Because I was that nervous and scared of the movies.
No.
But then I eventually watched them after I actually got over that fear. It was mainly because of Friday the 13th Part 7, The New Blood, that kind of got rid of that fear of horror. Because I realized, watching that film, and realized, oh, it's not scary, but it's actually fun. You know, horror films can be fun. They don't have to be scary all the time. And then that's when I was like, you know what, I'll watch these other Scream movies and other slashes, and then I enjoyed them after that. So a part of me does in hindsight regret not seeing the first two films in the cinema, because that would have been a great experience.
Maybe you were just not quite old enough, or, you know, you wasn't quite ready yet.
Yeah I just don't think I was, like, sort of ready to watch it yet.
Yeah, because after Scream came out, like, then I think we went and saw I Know What You Did Last Summer. I think, because I do remember, like, seeing that and the second one, because I think my mum came to a lot of these.
Yeah.
But she did mind these kind of like teen slasher films. I think I saw like Urban Legend by myself.
Yeah.
Can't quite remember.
I know I did see, I don't know if I did see I Know What You Did Last Summer in the cinema. I don't think I did, but I know I saw the sequel. And I also saw Urban Legend, Urban Legend 2. Like, pretty much any horror film, like, once I started getting into horror and any horror film started playing at my local cinema, I just basically was, like, there first thing to watch it. It's okay. He did stab Patrick Dempsey's perfect face.
I don't think I was old enough to see... Because Scream came out in 96, right?
Yeah.
So I wasn't quite old enough to see that in theaters.
Yeah, same here. Because I saw it, like, on video when I was maybe, like, 11, 12. I can't, you know, when it first came out to video.
Right. Yeah. It was the first horror movie, right? Yeah, the first horror movie I saw in theaters by myself was The Blair Witch Project.
Oh.
I did see that in theaters because it was on my birthday. And I went with because we had at the time this is like early days of when you meet people on the internet, and my mum had made a friend, and we thought, okay, we'll put him up, stay at our house. Yeah, well, that crazy. Coming from Italy. And so we had like a house guest for a few months, and you know, he said, all right, I'll take you to the movies on your birthday. You know, so your parents, you know, probably not going to take you to see this movie. So we went and saw it, and I'm sitting there going, I don't know, I was 14, 15, whatever, however old I was when it came out. And I'm like, I'm not really digging this movie. I'm not scared. And I've not really rewatched it since, so I don't know if I'll feel the same way. There's things I really appreciate and like about the film, though.
I think my first horror movie I saw in the cinema was actually Alien Resurrection. I completely destroyed the podcast with that revelation.
Yeah.
Well, that's creepy. There's a bag with blood all over it.
I don't know, it might sound creepy that, like, an adult took a teenage me to the movies, but he was, you know, it was a friend thing. It wasn't any of that weird creepiness that's in this movie. Mm. Just clarify that. I still know him today.
Yes.
You know, over, gosh, so long. You're not going anywhere,
Sydney. It's time you get... And I like the fact that the voice actor who does Ghostface voice in every single film, I think it's Roger Jackson.
Mm.
Like, anytime they interview him, he never shows his face at all in any of the interviews.
Mm-hmm.
Just to keep that mystique of his voice.
Mm-hmm. We know what he looks like, though.
Yeah.
It's
a good decision.
I think he was at a convention here, but I think I didn't go to that convention for some reason or something. I can't remember.
Mm.
It's such an iconic voice, though.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what makes it work, because it's the kind of slasher film you're not meant to know who the killer is, whereas, you know, Freddy, you know it's Freddy, you know it's Jason, you know it's Michael, kind of thing.
Hmm.
And then I was like, oh, really? It was him? Okay.
And then you find out that Roman is actually Sydney's long-lost brother.
Yeah, this is, like, going really crazy.
And also, like, very ridiculous as well. It's like, really? He's a brother that we've never heard of until now?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. It's like in Halloween trying to make Laurie and Michael related, you know? It's like, ooh, do we have to do that? We don't have to do that.
Yeah, and then it ties all the way back to the first one where he was stalking the mother, realizing she was... sleeping around, and she can if she wants. It's her life to do what she pleases. Mm. And he was like, you know, that ruined him, apparently.
Mm.
But, you know, considering the theme of films I've been watching for some freaking reason, I haven't done it on purpose, it's about boys with very bad mummy issues. So I'm just going to assume that he had a nepotist complex and he wanted to bang his mama.
Well, that's the thing, though. Like, I realized with, at least in the first three films, there's a little bit of that. Because, you know, Billy wanted to kill Sydney because her mum had sex with his dad, and then his mum and his mum left, and then of course Billy's mum comes in and wants to get revenge on Sydney for killing Billy, and now of course you find out that Roman is Sydney's brother, and the reason he killed her mum was set up Cotton to be like the killer is because like he was angry that she rejected her because he was a reminder of her horrible life that she was living in Hollywood. And of course they kind of changed that around by making Emma Roberts the killer in the fourth film by being that she's Sydney's cousin who wanted like internet fame.
And I like how he's going to try frame Milton. Because, you know, he made Maureen the way she was. I mean, look, he messed her up for sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a lot more than just some lady being promiscuous.
Yeah.
Which I think we can reflect on a lot of this, you know, toxic stuff now.
Yeah, like, I mean, you know,
this has given us a lot of freaking very serious conversation.
Yeah, I know. I was not expecting this. But I was going to say, like, even though, like, all the things, like, you know, people would say, oh, Maureen's, like, you know, a quote-unquote slut and all that. But, you know, she probably was dealing with her own kind of trauma well.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
Like, you know, again, I'm not judging her, but I'm definitely not judging her for, like, you know, sleeping around and all that. But, you know, there's the reason why she probably was because of the trauma she...
Yeah, there are clearly many reasons.
As an actress. Yeah.
But it doesn't, like, villainize Maureen for what she did or anything. It's the crazed way that the people interpret what she did. Yeah. Yeah, you tell him, Sydney.
I like this scene because it basically is like a brother-sister conversation when you get really angry. Fuck you, no, fuck you.
Yeah, pretty much. That's why we are like siblings, because that's how we communicate.
Yes.
Fuck you, no, fuck you. All right, see you tomorrow, yeah.
And pretty much, you know, Sydney's right because, you know, Roman is being a whiny baby and you know, all of this only happened because, like, he didn't have to kill Maureen. He could have just accepted, like, you know, she wasn't ready to, you know, face him and that part of...
She couldn't face that part of her life. Yeah, exactly.
And, like, instead of, like, being an adult about it, he was like, you know what, I'm just going to fucking kill her.
He's going to make someone else do it or get framed for it or whatever.
And of course, you know, he said earlier, like, it was easy for Billy to, you know, kill Maureen. Like, he didn't kill Maureen himself, but he orchestrated Billy to kill Maureen.
Yeah. Come on, Sydney.
Kick him in the balls.
Kill your own long-lost brother.
And if that doesn't mess up Sydney even more, so I just don't know what else will. Like, my boyfriend's tried to kill me, and my brother, long lost
what
brother, tried
Dewey
to kill me.
Doing?
Dewey's just being a Dewey.
Did he cut the power to get the doors unlocked?
Yeah.
Oh, I haven't seen this for ages.
And then he zaps himself.
He zapped himself. As if Dewey is not the best character.
Exactly. Like, I can definitely see why people do not like this film and say, I mean, I do agree it is the weakest of the series for all the reasons we've been talking about. It is way too comical. It's way more silly. But I don't know, maybe it is nostalgia, but I kind of enjoy it for what it is.
I enjoy it for what it is. Like, I really do.
Yeah.
I watched it a lot on DVD.
Yeah, you can definitely enjoy things. For what they are.
Yeah, like I've watched it with the commentary when I had the DVD and all that. I love the Scream films. I just think they're awesome.
No!
And here we think, oh no, Sydney's dead. But she's not the only one who knows how to use a bulletproof vest. Let's be real.
Exactly. Like, I think if you kind of take this movie for what it is as a very silly... over the top comedy that I think it works better. It is dumb. It is dumb too.
It follows that rule of the third movie in a lot of franchises being, I guess, they change it up to an extent that people think it's not as good.
Mm.
In a way, like the third one's the more sillier or whatever, you know.
Mm.
As they mentioned, The Godfather 3, Return of the Jedi. I mean, I love Return of the Jedi, but it definitely, you know, kind of lightened the tone a bit, whereas Empire was so dark.
Yeah.
And that one's still dark, but it changes it up again.
Mm. And again, like we were saying before, since this is like post-Columbine and they had to kind of change a bit of the violence and tone. Yeah. So they couldn't be as harsh as they probably would have. Because I remember, like, even though it's been, I haven't seen Scream 4 since that came out, I remember that one being incredibly harsh with its violence and all that.
It was. God, remember those phones?
So many 2000s flashbacks.
Go, Sydney.
7 in the back. I shot you. Impressive.
Mm-hmm. What a cunt.
Stab free, right?
Yep, she stabbed him 3 times.
Oh, that's right. I never realized that she does stab him 3 times. And that's the third blow.
Mm-hmm. It's a bit late, Dewey.
Sydney Prescott is just the queen of, like, how to take out bad guys.
Yeah, she's the fucking bomb.
She's so good at it, though.
Mm.
And now because she feels bad, it's her brother and he's psychotic. She'll hold his hand till he dies.
Yeah, well, I like, that's the thing I did like about, like, even after, like, yeah, you tried to kill me, you're a bit of a bastard, but you know what? I'm going to give you that last bit of family aspect that you were definitely craving for so long. So it's a nice little touch. Like, I like little touches like that.
Hmm.
Ah! And of course, you know, Dewey finishes.
Bulletproof vest!
Bulletproof vest.
Head! Go for the head! Dewey, head!
Dewey, you dumbass. Always aim for the head.
Double tap. Haven't these people seen Zombie Land?
Exactly. Exactly.
Always go for the head.
Well, I guess Patrick Dempsey wasn't the killer after all.
Maybe he comes back as the killer in Scream 5.
And also, this ending kind of is sad because you think, oh, Kincaid and Sydney are going to be a couple, but nope, they're not even together by the time the fourth film comes around.
Nope, how sad.
I know.
But this ends with, like, a very cute little ending for these two.
Yeah. And luckily the doggo wasn't the killer. But there's still time. We don't know
where the killer. Where are my balls, Sydney?
That's why I think that the fifth film, it's going to be Sydney's dog or a former dog.
Oh my God, does she have butterfly clips? I'm freaking
out. She does. Marcy, Tamika, if you both don't get butterfly clips after this podcast, I'm going to be very, very disappointed. I'm
going to try and order them. I'm not lying. I need them.
I'm pretty sure I still have a good bit of mine, those butterfly clips. I just have to find them.
Ugh, you have to send photos if you find them.
Okay, I will.
Yay!
God, and that dress she was wearing, I tell you.
Yeah, I wore dresses like that and tops. Yeah.
Yes.
Let's bring back the 2000 fashions.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like silky, those like silky dresses.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Has to happen.
Even watching this scene, you can definitely tell why, you can definitely see why, you know, David Arquette and Courtney Cox fell in love, because they're just so cute together.
Oh, they have chemistry in the movies. Like, yeah. Hmm.
It'll be interesting to see where their character's relationship will be in the fifth one, because I know they're married, been married for quite a while in the fourth film, but be curious to see how their relationship is in the fifth one. Like, are they still very much married, or maybe are they separated or something like that? Or maybe they're not together.
To see where it goes.
But like I said, like, this whole franchise is like keystones for both them as actors in real life, but also for their characters as well.
Oh, look, she's opening up the gates. She's not living in isolated security.
I just want to live in this house. I want a house actually, you know what? Now that I think about it, every 90s, early 2000s horror film had a house like this in it, where it's like out in the country.
What do you people do for a living?
Yeah, I know, right?
How can you afford a house like this? And they're going to watch a movie.
With the door open.
Oh, nothing bad will happen. And then, of course, like, the audience, because they go to black, and the audience is thinking, like, oh, something's... Because this is the thing, both the first and the second films, they always end with a quick flash of Ghostface's face, but they don't for this film, like, to say, oh, this is... That's it. That's the end. Right there.
But, you know, what I needed was the thing to come up and go... Ghostface will return in Scream 4.
Yes.
Let's just listen to this.
And Nick Cave and the Red Right Hand were just used in all the movies. And it was also used in Hellboy as well.
Yeah. I had the soundtrack to Scream and it was the best.
The Cable Guy.
Actually, it was. Yeah, now that I remember.
In alphabetical order.
I always had to laugh because whenever they did the screen credits, they had to make sure nobody else that had their name higher than our three main characters, because they had to be below Courtney Cox, so they can't be any... You couldn't have, like, David Arquette and someone with a B and then Campbell and... All these All these poor actors. They only had one day left to retirement. And special appearance by Jamie Kennedy.
And that is Scream 3. We're just going over the credits as we do when we watch a movie, but there's like 4 minutes of credits.
Indeed. And that was a massive nostalgia throwback for me.
And this is before we had like bonus scenes in the end of movies.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. It ends with a Creed song.
I know.
No!
And the first assistant director of this movie, whose name we just went past, that person would go on to direct the film you just watched recently, The Breed.
Ah, okay.
Breed. Oh, Josh Pace. Is that it who you were trying to figure out who his name was? Josh Pace. He was the one who played Kincaid's partner.
Oh, yeah, I couldn't think of his name.
Yeah, Josh Pace, I think his name is.
A Ninja Turtle.
Yes. I'm disappointed that Kane Hodder wasn't a stunt double in this film. But,
Scream 3.
Yes.
A lot more serious conversations than I anticipated for Scream 3, but... that's what you get with the Super Podcast. We talk about everything and anything as we watch a movie. We are the audio commentary experts. I have no idea why. We just are. as we go over the credits, as usual, you can find us at supermarcy.com. We are the Super Network. So supermarcy.com is your base for everything that we do, but you can also find... All of our stuff on all your social medias. If you look up The Super Network, we are on Twitter, Facebook. We have a Facebook page and group. We are on Instagram and TikTok and YouTube. So check that out. Everything is in our show notes and description as well. And if you personally want to find me, I'm at twitter.com/supermarcy and on Letterboxd under super/Marcy. Bead.
If people want to find me personally, they can find me on my Twitter page at twitter.com/BeeJamine or my Facebook writers page at facebook.com/TerribleAussie. And of course, you can find all my writings over at supermarcy.com with my reviews and columns. And also, but definitely head over to Twitter and follow me where I'll be doing my 31 Days of Horror so you can check out all my thoughts and opinions on all the films I'll be watching throughout the month of October.
Mm-hmm. And Tamika, where can people check your stuff out online?
Okay, so you can find me on Twitter and Instagram, and it's Mikachu is fine, all one word. And I'm also on TikTok at Typical Sag. I've been using my TikTok a lot lately.
Ooh.
And I'm going to probably be using it more now that it's
awesome.
The best time of the year. It's Halloween season. So, definitely follow me over there because I hope to be doing some haunted attractions pretty soon.
Ooh, that's exciting.
Yes.
Very exciting. Yes. Very
I'm excited. Scared, but excited.
Nice. And thank you, Tamika, for coming on the podcast today and doing this audio commentary on Scream 3 with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I was so excited when I found out it was Scream 3. Yes, I love the Scream franchise. Wow. And
you know,
love like late teen horror. So
yes.
Well, thank you.
Yes. See, the second I knew it was Scream 3, I'm like, I know who needs to be our guest. It's got to be Tamika. So I'm glad we were able to make this work. And it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. And I keep cutting you off and I apologize.
No, you're not. No, thank you so much. I had a great time. I hope I was enjoyable. I certainly tried. I'm so excited.
You are.
I'm excited to just binge, to start over from one and just go down the line.
Yes. I think we will all have to and once the new one comes out. Who knows? Yeah. Maybe like in our own spare time, the three of us will get together and just watch them all again.
Yeah, maybe we will. Who knows? We'll see. Yeah. We'll see. And with that is a wrap on our show. Thank you once again, Tamika, for joining us. It's always a pleasure to have you on our podcast, and hopefully you will be able to join us again soon as you're part of the Super Network family, or at least we like to think that you are. And Bede, thank you for being Bede. It's always a pleasure. I don't know why I'm taking over your hosting duties, but...
Indeed, but that always happens at the end of each episode, Marcy, so it's okay.
But yes, that's a wrap, and we'll see you for the Super Podcast once again very soon. As we always do, we have some bonus episodes in the works as well as our normal commentaries, and look out for November poll in the Facebook group where we will be, the choice will be from a 90s classic movie. So there we go.
Ooh, I'm excited.
I'm excited too. So with that, I'll bid you farewell. Stab your way to Halloween or something. I don't know. That was lame.
See you, everybody.
Bye-bye.
See you, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
You're dealing with the concluding chapter of a trilogy. One, you got a killer who's going to be superhuman. Number two, anyone including the main character can die. This means you sit...
Hello? Hello? Gail, Dewey, whoever, call me back. I can only hear myself.
I only hear you too, Sydney.
I am not dreaming. I am not crazy. He was there in Woodsboro.
It's not Woodsboro, Sid. Looks like Stab 3 is back in production. You gotta be praying it's a movie detail.
The Super Network is proudly sponsored by Surfshark VPN.
Why would you have a VPN in this day and age? Well, a lot of people are quite concerned about tracking and their online privacy, and using a VPN ensures that you are safe and secure online. Surfshark VPN provides a lot of extra added layers of security, as well as ad blocker and a kill switch if your information is ever compromised.
A great bonus feature with having Surfshark is something is not available on your streaming service in your country. You just pop on that Surfshark VPN and you can probably find so much more streaming in different countries. If you want to find something like Masters of Horror, it is available on Tubi, so just select the correct country and you'll be able to watch such a great and fantastic show.
Surfshark VPN is one of the most reliable and cheapest of the VPNs out there, with up to 81% off offer when you subscribe for 24 months. Please use the link surfshark.deals/supernetwork to take advantage of this amazing deal.
You can also find the link in the show notes.
Thank you, Surfshark. Surfy shark doo 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 doo. Surfy shark doo 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 doo.
And now back to the show.